There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1040, April 24th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say motorsports in the land of Mao. The Max dynasty continues. Seven drivers enjoying Peking duck. Ferrari will soon be enjoying mucho HB bucks. Mercedes winning in the money lane. We shall explain very gladly. Now back to lay host, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando makes the Aston Martin look really, really good. Legendary driver has subliminal GP2 engine moment. What is Lance Stroll doing in Formula One? And big Penske news, slapped with a big fine, well, not so big of a fine, but shocking allegations of manipulation of the push to pass systems in IndyCar. So NAS will probably have some interesting details on that. And I just want to remind everybody, this week's interview is part two of the fantastic Howden Ganley interview with Nasser Hamid. And I do need to remind everyone, yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to, and I want to thank Marilyn Harness for helping us out. Thank you very much. NAS, so much going on. It's crazy. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. A little bit suffering from the left coast jet lag, but it was good to be in California, both north and south. And since the host was very busy for little people, we could not connect. So Saturday, your story was at the Peterson Museum. Sunday, Long Beach Grand Prix. And my thanks to F1 Weekly Familia members, King James of Santa Cruz, whom you have met, and Tech Talk Tim, whom you have met also, for taking the time to meet up at the museum. And Peterson Museum is very nice. And in the next, I took a lot of pictures, which I will post on the F1 Weekly page in the next few days. So we'll see what we have there. So it was very good. And as was the case when Tech Talk, you know, he was studying at Stanford, if you remember those days. And after a visit to the Peterson Museum, we enjoyed some fine dining at a Persian restaurant. Love that grilled tomato, Mr. Rogers. Have you experienced Persian food, sir?
Of course, sir. It's wonderful. I love it. And so does everybody else in California.
Very good. And sir, far away across the Pacific, the Chinese Grand Prix was back on the schedule, which brings me to a very important public service message, because I enjoyed the race and the sprint race there very much. I'm going to do a little botas here, to whom it may concern. Those who want to ban TikTok and wonton noodles, please do not ban Chinese Grand Prix. This is required for mankind's peace and guilty pleasure. And Mr. Rogers, the drivers were surprised, Formula One was surprised, and I was surprised too, that the organizers were on the Mick Jagger program and had the track painted black. And the drivers were singing a James Taylor tune, "I've Seen Fire, I've Seen Rain." And Fire in the Grass reminded me of Joe Pesci and his Mud in the Tires from My Cousin Vinny. But I have to ask you, how does Fire in the Grass compare to Flying Shoe in Montreal?
Well, I'm telling you, what was really bizarre, there had been rain the previous night, the grass was green. So the thing is, I mean, was there really green grass there, or were they spraying something that's highly flammable? I'm not quite sure, but you know what? It was interesting. Luckily, Smokey the Bear was just right there around the corner.
Okay, good. But the show was good, as is the case any time Formula One cars are racing, and obviously some races are more exciting than the others, but that has, since all the time I've been watching Formula One since 73, season opener in Buenos Aires, also known as Buenos Aires, there was only one Grand Prix that was boring. That was some years ago when Lewis won the championship in Abu Dhabi. It was so boring that I said, you know, why am I watching this? But that was the only time I questioned myself watching a Formula One race. But anyway, moving on, quali. The sprint quali was a shocker. Max not on the front row was the first Shanghai surprise of the weekend. It was a fish and chips lockout of the front row. Lando Norris taking pole and his fellow Englishman LCH in second. Alonso was faster than Max, and that was muy impressive. Hate to say this, but your favorite driver qualified dead last. Logan Sargeant. But what can you do? Now, did you enjoy the sprint race, sir?
I did enjoy the sprint race just to see how quickly Max was going to take the lead, you know, and win the darn thing. So that's why I was so happy with that spritz of rain. It just mixed it all up, and it gave confidence to some people who needed some confidence. And then there were others who didn't really need any confidence. They just needed a couple minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So Saturday, we had the first sprint race of the season. Gee, what a surprise. LCH leading the sprint race was the second surprise. Alonso behind LCH in second was no surprise, at least for me. How did that make you feel? Did it bring back some memories? Oh, the memories.
Oh, the memories.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse, how lovely it was.
It did. I mean, not only that, this whole Chinese weekend was great for Fernando. Once again, he makes that Aston Martin look a lot better than it really, really is. Ask Lance Stroll.
No, there's no question about that. Actually, funny you say that. Earlier in the day, I was watching this on YouTube, Tom Clarkson conversation with Stoffel Vandoorne, who had a very, very impressive junior career. He was lost in the rapture of love McLaren and Honda had for Alonso at that time. But anyway, good dice behind LCH and Fernando. Carlito trying to take third from Max. No love lost here from their Toro Rosso days. And Max was reporting battery not charging. I expected Max, without any issues, to take the lead by the end of the second lap. Now, once the battery issue was resolved, the driver was on charge. The writing was on the podium wall. On lap 7 of 19, he said bye-bye to Machismo to move into second. And only two laps later, it was Dasvidaniya to what you call, what's up, my brother? And that's all she wrote from the banks of Yangtze River. In the closing stages of the sprint race, exciting battle brewing between two prancing horses and a Red Bull, all trying to bring down a Machismo. Within a few corners, they took Alonso off the podium and put him in sixth, and it happened very quickly. Then the Ferraris started their own civil war. Very exciting to watch, and I know Alonso had to retire, but there was no major collateral damage that they crashed, and car parts are flying, wheels are flying, so none of that. So that's good. Now, this is very interesting, Mr. Rogers. I noticed that, and of course the commentators made a comment too. The 19-lap sprint race won by Max from LCH by over 13 seconds. I have to say, good evening, Mr. Wolf, and again, to whom it may concern, who said, my team don't make mistakes. This Pakaj is very, very good. This driver is also very, very good. One can only watch and say, oh dear, what say you, Duke of Dijon?
It was awesome. I mean, it was great stuff. You know, Mercedes have done it again. It's still in W13 mode. I don't care what anybody says. And I hate to say it, but Lewis Hamilton knows it as well. I mean, he saw glimpses of hope. But listen, Lewis Hamilton is in Florence. He's hanging out in Rome, subliminally, of course. He really doesn't have the heart in this Mercedes package anymore. He's ready to skedaddle.
Do you remember once, I think it has to be the McLaren Honda package, and you know, Jenson Button endured years and years of bad cars, or cars that were not even remotely close to being competitive. And when he was with that, I think it was the McLaren Honda package he had, and his comment after getting out of the car was, "I've never been so happy to get out of a racing car." And I think that's where Lewis and George find themselves. So you can't blame them. But I've been thinking, this car is going nowhere, okay? I think it'll be a good idea for both parties to walk away before the season is over and maybe put Kimi Antonelli or somebody else in that seat. And nothing would be expected from that car, so these drivers can learn the ropes by flying below the radar. And this car is seriously below the radar. What say you?
It is indeed. I feel bad for Toto, but they're going to hang in there. They got an upgrade package coming up for Miami. And, you know, the biggest problem is everybody else has an upgrade package coming up. So it's going to be great. But, yeah, they just need to be patient over there. Stop the crying. Accept it. And I feel bad for Lewis. You know, he probably should have took the year off like Fernando did or Kimi. And regroup. That way when you get to Ferrari, you're refreshed, meditated, and he would have been fresher. So it's going to be tough to watch Lewis Hamilton all year long. I feel really bad for him, but we're going to get great, great radio messages.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so that's basically the main reason they should go separate ways, to avoid, bad feelings or insulting each other. But I have to say this, based on the way McLaren package has been going, they're using Mercedes engines, so it's not like Mercedes has a GP2 engine. I think it's their, they just don't seem to have a good understanding of downforce with the new regulations like Red Bull. So we'll have to see how, but I don't expect this team to win any races this year, unfortunately. Do you?
Well, anything can happen. There's always even a chance that Aston Martin might win a race. That's because, it'll be because Max had a DNF or there's been some weird penalty. So otherwise, yes, this is a complete Max dominating year. I mean, look at China. I mean, but I have to admit, I think the Ferraris were hidden gems in China. It just didn't suit them. They'll be back in Miami, and I think it's going to be Ferrari McLaren really catching up and really frustrating Toto even further.
Yes, sir. And now we look at Colli for GP. Front row was no surprise. Max taking pole number 5 from 5 races. Mika Hakkinen was the last driver in 1999 to take pole position for the first 5 races. And I believe this, of course, Red Bull first pole position and victory came here, I think 2009, if I remember correctly. And then this was 100 pole position for Red Bull as a team. So congrats to Christian Horner and all his people. Checo kept his calm and qualified next to his teammate. Third on the grid was Machismo, almost half a second off Max's pace, but still way ahead of his teammate, who did not make it to Q3 and qualified 11th. Then came the two papaya cars, Lando ahead of Oscar. Then the two red cars. Charles Leclerc was sixth on the grid, over half a second slower than pole winning time. And you know, I think if you are 0.2 seconds slower than Max, you have no chance of winning, and half a second you can forget. And that's just the way it is this day and age. These times pretty much confirm what we already know and will continue to experience till the end of 2025, that Max and Red Bull have their feng shui in order. They are and will remain on a different planet. And that's what I've accepted till the 2026 season kicks in. Are you expecting any upheaval in the order next season?
Not next season, none at all, actually. Well, McLaren, I think Ferrari could make some steps forward in aero upgrades. But wouldn't it be hilarious if when we get to 2026 with the new cars, active aero, it's going to be pretty trippy. And what if Ford nails it and Max dominates again and again and again and again?
Well, then we are looking at 8-9 championships in a row.
It will be ridiculous. People will cry in their milk.
Yes, it would be something. And if we can even watch this in our lifetime, Mr. Rogers, we just have to celebrate, you know.
We do have to celebrate. And if, you know, the push right now from Toto Wolff trying to get Max, because everybody realizes Max, I mean, Fernando brings you 6/10. I think Max brings you a full second.
Well, that's very possible. There's no denying his talent. But, you know, the thing is, I have to go back to the last four races of 2021. Max, the great Max, the talent of the century, put LCH in a spot where he had to win all four races to get the championship. And for all practical purposes, that's what Lewis did. So nobody walks on water, and you have to have the package to deliver. But the thing with Max is, if he has a package that is 0.2, 0.3 slower, I think he still gets you before the checkered flag. And that's where the real danger is. I mean, we've seen Uber domination in Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren, Lotus, Alfa Romeo in the 50s. That happens. But this guy is bringing, you know, just more than a threat. He is just like a, I don't know, double or a triple threat. So incredible to see such talent in a lifetime, that's for sure. And speaking of talent, car 44, where are you?
There's a holdup in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout troop short a child, Khrushchev's still red and a wild.
Car 54, where are you?
Solid 18th on the grid. He said, and I quote, "It was my mistake. I just struggled. I can't seem to stop the car at turn 14. It just kept locking. I needed one more lap." End quote. Yeah, I think he needs one more lap in the 2026 season to catch up to Max. It ain't happening this year or next year. Sad but true. Now, next year he's going to Ferrari, so maybe he can do it in half a lap. We'll see. No Florida fresh orange juice for guessing who was the slowest qualifier. Hint, he is from Boca Raton. And you like him very much. Have you heard the latest rumor about Logan Sargeant?
Nasser, I've given up on why Williams is doing what they're doing. But I'm, like you said, he does bring money to the table. And dollars make a lot of sense when you need dollars. So I assume he could be bringing more money. Because if he doesn't, somebody has to put an end to this.
Well, you know, you're not the only one who has given up on him. According to rumors floating around, looks like Williams' team is now coming to the same conclusion. And the rumors are that Miami will be his last race. And Toto, courtesy of millions and millions of dollars from his pocket and Mercedes, because he is a Mercedes Junior, they're going to put him, you know, James Vowles used to work for Toto, so they're going to put Kimi Antonelli there. So this way he has more than half a season to prepare and then replace Lewis Hamilton, which is a good idea. And I won't be happy to see Logan Sargeant go or any driver halfway through the season, but he's done more than 25 races now. And if you can't even, you know, if his teammate was Max or Fernando Alonso or Lewis, and he had not out-qualified the guy, that I can understand. But man, if you cannot even out-qualify Alexander Albon in 25, 30 races, not even once, then there's a series called NTT IndyCar Series. Have you heard of it, right?
It's one of my favorites, Nasser.
Yeah, same here. Okay, sir, as a flashback, the first time Lewis Hamilton raced in Shanghai, your favorite season 2007, it was sweet and sour. Sweet for the Hammy haters and sour for the LCH lovers. He started from pole position, was leading in the rain, and McLaren wanted to make him world champion at that race. which was a possibility. They delayed his pit stop, and his Mongolian beef dishes were done in the kitty litter. He lost the championship in the season finale due to irrational exuberance at the start. But here is hot sauce of the day. In the championship, he still finished ahead of his then teammate. Who could that be? The one and only, the most popular driver of F1 Weekly Stipulation Studios. Anyway, moving on to the race itself, Grand Prix. Sir, the Grand Prix came at midnight. Were you awake at midnight to watch it live?
No, sir.
Oh, really? You watched it later?
Absolutely, sir. My beauty rest is so fundamental to my well-being that even Fernando has to wait.
Oh, that's a first. Well, here is not the Da Vinci Code, but the Da Winning Code for Max. 4 out of 5 equals 58. That's 58 Grand Prix wins at the age of Aquarius. Harmony and sympathy is all we need for Checo and 18 other drivers. And I'm beginning to feel sorry for 18 drivers now, to be honest with you. And some of them are still very good drivers. Pulling away at 1 second per lap at the start, restart, or second restart has become SOP for MAX. At this rate, Max may equal Michael Schumacher's number of Grand Prix wins, which is 91, by the end of next season. Very, very scary. I say load him up while you have the Mark of Donahue car. The unfair advantage. And as we discussed, you know, no package, no delivery. The Red Bull Package is firing on all cylinders, MGH, MGU, and whatever aerodynamic new tricks they have on board. The Red Bull, and this is very interesting and impressive, equally impressive, I should say. The Red Bull Ant Colony is equally effective in the pit lane. This is evidenced by the fact that 9 of the 10 fastest pit stops so far this season has been performed by the Red Bull crew. Fastest was 1.9 seconds for Max in China. Very, very impressive. Australia was the only race where Red Bull did not record the fastest lap, and that went to Ferrari for 2.18 seconds. Stop for Charles Leclerc. What was your overall impression of the fine display of driving by Fernando Alonso in the race? And the man who actually won the race overall.
Unbelievable. Are you kidding me? That start where Fernando goes around Perez on the outside. I'm telling you, I had heart palpitations. He's providing us some great, exciting racing. Now, I knew he didn't have the pace. The car is not going to keep up with Big Bob at the front. But, man, Fernando gives us a lot of excitement every day, dollar for dollar. Fernando is the best deal in town.
Yeah, you get two drivers for the price of one.
Exactly! Who knows what Lance is doing back there?
Yeah, speaking of machismo, man, if he had taken the lead at the start and only for one lap, that would have been a statement heard all around the world. Okay, there's no question about it. And who says you can't teach old dogs new tricks? This hombre will try any trick to get ahead or keep you behind. Just ask Checo or George Russell. So very, very impressive, I must say. And Lando Norris was second for McLaren. He was oh so close to his maiden victory in Sochi a few years ago. He is still looking for that elusive first win. In Shanghai, he was impressive, but had no chance of victory unless there was a Brembo or Hitco issue on car number one. Do you think we need some white powder on the floor of the Red Bull team?
Well, it could come to that eventually. And Christian Horner is right. He always says this will not last forever. And it won't. I mean, it's classic Formula One. But the team that wants to take that mantle back is going to be the next dominant team. So it's going to be interesting to watch. And like I said, Red Bull and Ford are fairly savvy. They might imitate what we're seeing right now. So, like Fernando, Lewis, I honestly don't see a championship in your lives again.
How sad that would be. Anyway, Lando's second place was his second podium in 3 races. So, McLaren looking good now. He has scored points in every race this season. Chinese Grand Prix, interestingly, was the first race in 2024 where we did not have a 1-2 for the winning team. It is good to see McLaren, after all these years, punching in the same arena and zip code as Red Bull. I hope their efforts are rewarded this season as they have two mighty fine young drivers on the payroll. Wouldn't it be something if Piastri gets a win before Lando Norris, just like JB got two wins before LCH at McLaren?
To be honest with you, I don't think that would be good, because Piastri is not as fragile as Norris. I think fragility is something Norris has. If he doesn't get the first win before Piastri, that's really going to be a bad sign psychologically.
You know, his team owner, one of the team owners, was telling me that when he was in junior series, before he even got to Formula 2 and GP2, she was telling me that he cries on the floor of their truck when he finishes second. I mean, that's how bad he wants to win a race. So I wonder what he's doing. Oh, by the way, and this person who told me is now a commercial director or something like that for McLaren, and I'm looking forward to saying hello to her in Miami, which we will talk a little bit later. Now we come to third man on the podium, Sergio Perez. Looks like he has taken the advice of Christian Horner. Just drive the car, which is what he is doing now. That car is good enough for a podium finish. Checo has been on the podium in 4 of 5 races this season. Australia was the exception, where he was 5th. Both cars on the podium in every race will easily bring the constructors' title and millions of dollars to Milton Keynes. And with the package they have, they don't have to worry about the driver's championship. That's already settled 5 races into the season. Okay, this really shows. I mean, this is disappointing, sad, but it's reality. Checo has not won a race since last year Azerbaijan Grand Prix in April. But then again, most of the drivers on the grid will be smashed like a Tijuana Piñata if they were in the second Red Bull car. Some are saying, been there, done that. Here's looking at you, Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon, with all due respect. Mr. Rogers, I have a question for you. What are the chances of Max winning 20-plus races this season while teammate is looking for his first 2024 victory after Max takes pole at Yas Marina? How sad will that be?
Well, I mean, you know, Max is a talent, and the car may suit Max much better than it does Perez. He's always going to be second, so to speak. But, you know, things happen in life. You know what I'm saying? I can't remember when Michael Schumacher had the accident and broke his leg. I think it was 1999. And, well, all of a sudden, a couple of number twos thought they had a big chance. And something like that could happen, where it's not a severe injury, just a mild little broken leg, and you never know. We could just call him Tanya for now.
Oh, dear. I'm surprised Jeff Galuli has not been given a paddock pass. Shocking. I mean, can you imagine him and Machine Gun Kelly doing a joint interview with Martin Brundle?
Oh, it's perfect. And don't forget, you have to bring in Megan.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Wilbur!
Well, she was in the news. I won't get into why she was, but you saw that, right?
I did see that. And Nasser, this is a family show.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Okay, Australian Grand Prix winning team could not even get one driver on the podium. Leclerc was 4th, his 3rd fourth-place finish this season. His best finish was 2nd behind his teammate in Australia. Teammate Carlito was 5th. Coming into China, Sainz Jr. had been on the podium in all 3 races in which he was racing. I was expecting this momentum will continue, but it did not work out that way. And there are strong, strong rumors that Audi gave him a deadline to sign, and apparently they have an open checkbook for him. And now they have extended the deadline. And the other guy who they really want is Nico Hülkenberg. So we'll see how this thing works out. I have a feeling, tell me if you agree with me on this, I have a feeling we may see another win or two for Ferrari before the season is over.
Absolutely. I think Leclerc has a win in him, and Sainz, he's so burned up about being replaced with LCH that he wants more wins.
Russell was 6th. Both GR and teammate LCH have won DNF this season. Russell's best finish of the season came in the season opener in 5th. Alonso, 7th. Machismo was again man of the moment. He ran out of hard tires, so the team switched him to soft tires. His 3rd and final pit stop of the race was on lap 43, 13 laps before the finish, he charged from 12th to 7th at the end and set the fastest lap of the race, proving once again there is still bark and bite in this old chihuahua. Piastri, 8th, a McLaren driver, has scored points in every race, which is good. Best finish was 4th in Saudi Arabia and homeland Australia. In China, he suffered some collateral damage to his car. And here comes All Rise, LC8, 7-time world champion, 104 Grand Prix, I believe. He was 9th. This was his 3rd race finish in the same position this season. 7th in the season opener in Bahrain has been his best finish. The question is, where have all the flowers gone and race wins gone? Gone to Max and Red Bull, everyone. Hopefully one day Mercedes will learn how to build a winning race car again. You know, I've been thinking, remember, once upon a time, I think it was the Honda Earth car, where the car just was not working as per the wind tunnel results. And they tried every which way, and then they tried another wind tunnel and found out, oh, the original wind tunnel was not calibrated properly. Do you think they could have some sort of a problem there? There's no shortage of technology and brain power at Mercedes. Do you think there could be some sort of an issue like this?
It could be, because equipment, especially test equipment, things that you rely on, especially when you're doing design work, calibration is very, very important. My father was into calibration big time, so I can dig it.
Yeah, and Hülkenberg and Haas F1 picked up the final point from 10th place finish. His teammate K-Mag was 16th. Now let's take a look at some other highlights and lowlights from the Chinese Grand Prix. Local driver, you know, I found out something I never knew this. You know, they have these two bridges on top of the, next to the grandstand going over the track. They are very high, of course, and that's where the media center is located. That's very impressive.
What if you're afraid of heights?
Then you sit in the middle of the room. It's very simple.
Bravo.
Yeah, and they bring you some, you know, wonton soup and you forget your sorrows. Anyway, local driver Guan Yu Zhou having a Mika Hakkinen moment in front of the grandstands after finishing 14th. His teammate Valtteri Bottas was the first DNF of the race when his Ferrari engine went done, blowed up. Another DNF was Daniel Ricciardo. He had a few choice words for Lance Stroll after he did a Jackie Wilson on him and lifted me higher. And Ricciardo, for once, was going to score points and finish ahead of Yuki, but I guess the Japanese gods did not want that, so that was not good. A little bit more on Daniel Ricciardo later. Hülkenberg reaching new heights, which I'm sure he's hoping he did not. The German driver has equaled the record of Andrea De Cesaris, 0 wins from 208 Grand Prix starts. Like the Roman driver, Nico has been able to achieve a pole position in his career, but unlike Andrea, he has not been able to reach the podium in his career so far. Nico was A1GP champion for the Willy Weber run Team Germany, and as you know, he's still waiting for the payment from the organizers. And he also won the GP2 series in his first year, which is really the first test if you are F1 material. And he did that in his rookie season, just like your favorite LC8 Charles Leclerc and George Russell. And that's where Alex Albon did not shine big time. De Cesaris was on pole position at Long Beach in 1982 for Alfa Romeo. He had a huge crash. I was watching this race during the 1985 Austrian Grand Prix. And he was fired on the spot by the Ligier team. Unfortunately, he lost his life in a motorbike accident in October 2014 in his hometown of Rome. And sir, we come to Logan Sargeant. He is now 4 points away from race ban. He was penalized for passing under safety car period. And as we had mentioned that he may be replaced after Miami. You know, he's from Boca Raton area. So we'll see how that works out. And sir, before we go to Motorsports Mondial, some very important news. Round 6 will be in Miami on May 5. And I am totally elated to say I will be there with media credentials thanks to Senor Paul Velasco of GrandPrix247.com. And they have also agreed to give me media credentials to Austin and Vegas. So I'll go to these races. And what is happening here? As I sent, you know, there's a lot of, Michael Andretti opened a racing facility in England, and they're trying very hard to get into Formula One. So Mr. Velasco asked me to go and have a chat with Mario Andretti. So I sent an email to his PR people, and they said they will get back to me because they don't know the itinerary right now. Unfortunately, it took some time to get this approval from FIA/FOM. And it's amazing, man, how many documents you have to sign. It's just mind-boggling. It's like you're doing a corporate hostile takeover, so many documents. But anyway, I sent an email to this lady. Remember some years ago we interviewed Franz Tost in Austin? That lady is still with Toro Rosso. I mean, what is it called? Visa Cash RB. And she has been with them since when they were Minardi. And this is very interesting. She used to work for the Italian Postal Service and deliver mail to Minardi. And do you remember a guy, Austrian guy by the name of Gustav Brunner, who was a designer, and he worked for Minardi and also for Toyota? So when they hired, she found out that the team was looking for German, and she German speaking person, so she speaks German. So she applied, got the job. So anyway, I sent her an email, if you can get 10 minutes for Honey Badger, and she responded, but you know, it's very tight, but we'll see what we can do. But if not here, maybe we can talk to Denny Boy if he's still in Formula One in Texas. So we're trying every which way, Mr. Rogers, and we'll see how it works out. But I'm hoping that there are a couple of people who talk to me at least for a few minutes when they see me. One of them is Carlos Sainz Sr. and the other is Adam Norris, Papa of Lando. So hopefully we can get some nice inside information from these fine gentlemen. And with that, sir, it's time for some Florida fresh orange juice or citrus juice, whatever the flavor is, and we shall return.
Thank you, Nasser. So we'll be back after part two of the Howden Ganley interview. Thank you.
Yeah, I was reading, this was Peter Gethin's first and only win, and some years ago I was reading his interview, and he said, you know, it was so close that intentionally he raised his hand before the checkered flag. So, you know, this being Italy, he thought they'll think, you know, this guy won. Was that the most exciting race you were ever in?
It was certainly one of. Maybe the Canadian Grand Prix had some merit there as well. And my former three race at Brands Hatch in 1969 was probably the most exciting. I think the excitement for me at Monza, I thought it was diluted by the fact my engine had deteriorated, or even, you know, if the brakes had stayed up, I might have been able to dive down and kind of muscle my way through on the inside. So, yeah, it was tempered by that little problem.
Now, every time there's a race, Formula One race at Monza, they talk about the passions of the Tifosis and all that, and I've experienced that as a spectator there a few times. As a driver, do you ever pay any attention to these things?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're aware of it, or other people maybe are wound up by it, but it certainly has a terrific atmosphere, but then so do a lot of races. Silverstone used to as well, probably still does. As I wasn't probably one of the Tifosi's favorite guys, it didn't make any difference to me, I don't think.
How was the experience driving with Sever and finishing second at Le Mans? And I believe you were leading at one stage when you were hit from behind.
Yeah, it looked as though we were going to win. I mean, driving with Francois was terrific. We got on well. I wasn't. He was worried that I was going to come and try and go faster than he was, and I said, "No, we're going to do this properly and cruise along at our set speed, and there's no egos here," which actually then sorted it out between us. Driving for Matra was just fantastic. They were such a great team. So that was a wonderful experience. And yes, if you look up the Jebby Cronbach book, we basically led for 20 hours, I think it was. And at some point, because I'd remembered the McLaren-Ken Miles situation at Le Mans, you know, in 1966. Oh, so I said to the to Duca Rouge and to Lagardère at some point in the night, you know, what's going to happen here? Who's going to win? And they said, "Oh, don't worry about it, because you guys are using so much less brake pad and less fuel that you're just gradually easing away from the other car. So it's, you know, you're going to win it. We don't need to mess around with team orders." So, okay, I was happy with that result. And then, of course, we got the water in the ignition and then had to stop. I think twice, three times, to try to get that sorted out, by which time we had lost our lead. And So we were in second place, and I just caught up to Graham then after sorting the problem out when he ran into that rainstorm, and he just disappeared into the wall of water. And I was only on intermediate, so I thought, well, there's a problem. So I had to lift off, and I was going as quick as I could. But the Corvette, presumably on rain tyres and much heavier, cutting through the water, just ran straight in the back of me. And I was over on the right-hand side of the straight. I wasn't in the middle of the road or anything.
What's it like going at 200 miles per hour, 2 in the morning at Mulsanne?
See, as I said before, it seems relatively slow. It doesn't seem anything special, no.
Now, everybody talks about the Matra V12 engine. Was that a special sound?
Yeah, fantastic sound. Yeah, it was. Well, I think, yeah, any V12 is going to have a sound like that. The Matra was great. I think the Westlake Eagle was. The BRM had a different exhaust system of those megaphones, which gave it a slightly throatier sound, so it didn't scream like the Matra. Yeah, the Matra was beautiful noise.
You mentioned a couple of, I'm a big Matra fan. Jean-Luc Lagardère is the gentleman who brought Matra into motor racing, and Gérard Ducarouge. How did you find these two people dealing with them?
Well, Gérard Ducarouge, I thought it was a fantastic bloke. I mean, nothing was left to chance with Gérard, and because he'd been, I guess, in the aerospace industry, and I came in and joined up with the team when we started doing the 24-hour tests. We did 3 24-hour tests at Paul Ricard, because the first one, it didn't go far enough. The second one, it just about went far enough, so I went back and did a third one, and I saw how thorough he was. Nothing was left to chance. He was terrific. And, yeah, Jean-Luc Lagardère, I didn't have a great deal to do with him. I talked to him from time to time at the testing. He came, he was pretty hands-on, taking an interest in what was going on. I saw him immediately after the race, and he said to me, nothing to blame, nothing to blame. He didn't tell me, not my fault I was running into. But he said, for you next year. And at that stage, of course, we were all going to go next year. But then the rules changed. Whatever happened, suddenly all the Rosbifs and the Kiwis had to leave.
Now, sports car racing was very big in those days. A lot of Formula One drivers would go there. You were there. Did you enjoy sports car racing as much as Formula One?
Well, I always thought that I was a single-seater guy, and that's what I should do, and that was my love. Then I got to drive sports cars, and with the Matra, and then with the Mirage, and then the Can-Am car I thought was fantastic. Loved that. Even the little 2-litre Chevron, I drove that at Kyalami in 71 and then again at Nürburgring in 72. So, yeah, I just kind of got on with sports cars, although I thought I was a Formula One driver.
Frank Williams was your team owner in 1973, and like I said, this was the year I started following racing and the Dutch Grand Prix, tragic Dutch Grand Prix. Yeah. A couple of things. We interviewed Hees van Lennep, and I think he is the one who gave Frank Williams the first World Championship point. I asked him about this race where Williamson was killed and that none of the drivers stopped apart from David Purley. And he said to me, and I've read this many times, that most of the drivers thought that David Purley, it was his car, so nobody even thought the driver was trapped inside. Your thoughts and what do you remember from that race?
Have you read The Lost Generation?
Not yet.
I have written a piece for my own book, and I gave it to David Tremaine because I think it summed up my feeling. Yes, well, you're going around there, there's a car on fire, but there's nobody doing anything about it, and there's a big fire engine, there was a big fire engine just up the road, right. So the natural feeling is, well, it's not like there's a whole bunch of marshals running about, and the fire engine's not coming and nothing, so there can't be anybody trapped in the car, because they wouldn't just leave it like that, would they? That's the logical conclusion. Had they red flagged the race and everybody had stopped, there had been a bunch of guys with Nomex and helmets on, they'd have flipped the car over and dragged Roger out of it. A terrible indictment of whoever was running the race. And it was absolutely devastating when we came back in, and Judy said to me, "Did you know Roger Williamson was in the car?" I just couldn't believe it.
Okay, now this next race you've brought up already, the chaotic 73 Canadian Grand Prix, and you can see videos that some of the team members are urging you to go and claim the prize because you were the winner, or they were thought you were the winner. What do you have to say about that race?
Well, Judy did a lap chart, and so, she had me there, although she did concede there's a blip, and perhaps Emerson had got in front of me, but he was the only one. We hadn't been going particularly well all season, but at this race, the ambient was very low, very cold day, because it had rained when we were on the warm-up lap. I thought, I remember the Canadian Grand Prix, I think it was from 67, when Bruce nearly won in the M5 McLaren, and it had dried out. And I thought, it's not going to keep raining, it'll dry out, because I know it's done it before. So I didn't mess my car around. You know, some people have put soft springs and they disconnect the anti-roll bars and they crank a load of wing into it and they do all those things for a wet race, which you naturally do. So anyway, I stayed out longer than everybody else, according to our chart. The official chart has me stopping much sooner. And I wasn't going to stop, until Tim Schenken and the other car had stopped. So the guys had a practice pit stop, because nobody had ever practiced it before. And also, I wasn't going to come in while the pit lane was full of cars, because it was a really narrow little pit lane, short pits. During practice, it was a real traffic jam in there. So I thought, you've got to wait till everybody else has done it. Of course, then I'm staying out there a bit longer than I really wanted to, driving around trying to find wet patches to keep the tyres cold. So we made a terrific stop, then went out again, and then came to the pace car, and they grabbed me. I thought I had dropped out of the lead while I was in the pits, but perhaps I hadn't. So then on we went, and eventually Revson caught up to me. But he didn't get past. I fended him off. When we came to the finish, the checkered flags waved. So has it been waved for me, or is it for Revson, or Hunt? Who's it? I can see him some way back in the mirror. So I did one more lap flat out, just to make sure, and came in, and they said, yeah, you won. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure, maybe third. And for sure, that's the alternatives on Judy's chart. When they wanted, you know, some of the teams went up to the tower, obviously, with their charts. Didn't want to know about Judy's. It was probably the most accurate one of them all. They said, oh, well, okay, you can be sixth, which I thought, I was really penalised for that. So, and they put Jackie Stewart in front of me. Well, I know that Jackie had been into the pits, and it was too crowded, so Ken waved him out again. Then he came back, and then it fell off the jack. And there's no way he could have been in front of me. That was ridiculous.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And let's talk about my road trip there to SoCal. You know, back in the day, driving to LBGP was an annual festival. First time I drove there was 1986. Really enjoyed the race. Mario Andretti was the winner for Carl Haas and Paul Newman. And I was there when Monty won his first IndyCar race after chasing down Tony Kanaan's McDonald's-sponsored car. That was a very impressive win by Montoya. And I'm sure you remember, this is my great memory from that event. You remember the Toyota celebrity race they used to have. Now, one year when Willie Tiras was driving for Dan Gurney's Toyota team, both were invited to drive in the Toyota celebrity race. And I was there, saw this happen. Shortly before the race, Tricky Dicky Willie T, as he used to call himself, he put a wheel in the trunk of Dan's Toyota Celica, to make it, you know, more weight, and so he does not win. So that was very interesting. The place used to be jam-packed. Then came the Tony George-led crusade and the split. I was there for the first champ car race after the split, and believe me, you had to look for people. It was a sad, sad scene. And now we have Penske Entertainment running the show. You know, there was a decent amount of crowd, but it was nowhere what I used to see in the 80s and 90s, and hopefully they'll come back. The Long Beach Grand Prix is now owned by Gerald Forsythe, 100%. This is a gentleman from Chicago area. He is in the energy business. He used to own the Players' sponsored IndyCar team. He is no fan of roundy round racing, so the good news is we will not be seeing Dick Trickle battle Greg Biffle at Long Beach NASCAR Nation 500. So I know you're a little disappointed, but can you dig it?
I can dig it, but we got Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot of fun in Chicago in the rain, in the streets. And my friend and I, we watched the race from our usual spot, the parking lot roof of Hyatt Regency, which is overlooking the front straight shortly after the start-finish line. And man, the cars are flying at a massive speed. Very, very impressive. And we did get down to the ground level and watched it by the fence. The race was won by Scott Dixon for Chip Ganassi Racing. He is on his way to passing AJ Foyt's record of most wins in IndyCar racing. And, sir, at the top of the show, you mentioned this penalty for Roger Penske team. I was so surprised, but I'm glad they're doing this. Penske owns the series and, of course, owns the Penske Racing team. And what is shocking is they are disqualifying the race winner, Joseph Newgarden, and the other driver also from St. Petersburg race, which took place like 45 days ago. And what happened is, like which you said, that they were using push-to-pass button before they got to the start-finish line, which is a no-no. And how the series found out, they found out during warm-up in Long Beach, and so they did an investigation. And just like FIA was able to get data from Renault and find out, oh, yeah, instead of pressing the brake pedal, Nelson Piquet Jr. was pressing on the accelerator after crashing into the wall, so the team got busted. So very, very surprising. But, you know, rules have to be the same whether you own the series or not. You okay with that, sir?
Yeah, I was absolutely floored and read every detail about it because it was very confusing. And like you said, a lot of people were shocked and mocked. Some press people mocked the F1 stewards because, these stewards for the IndyCar series, they went back 6 weeks to the St. Petersburg race and said, I don't think so, and annulled everything, which makes Felipe Massa really feel good.
That's good. That's good. So with that victory taken away from Joseph Newgarden, the new winner is Patricio O'Ward, Pat O'Ward, as they call him, for a McLaren team. So that's good for them. Now we come to WEC, World Endurance Championship from Imola. Scuderia Ferrari doing much better than their Formula One division. 1-2-3 in qualifying. Race winner, the number 7 Toyota of Mike Conway, Nick DeVries, and Kamui Kobayashi. Ferrari drivers lost any chance of victory after the team messed up the pit strategy when the rain came. And where have we seen this before, Mr. Rogers? Porsche took second and third. That Ferrari car, which is built by Dallara, is a beautiful machine. And so is the Peugeot car. You know, the Peugeot was running without a rear wing, and that they were going nowhere. Like the W, that was their W13, so now they put a wing back, rear wing, and see what happens. Okay, IMSA, also in Long Beach, Cadillac 1-2 in the Acura-sponsored race. Sebastian Bourdais was the winner ahead of Pipo Derani. Our cousin Felipe Nasr was third for Penske Porsche. And sir, Mercedes may not be winning on the track, but they are definitely winning in the money lane. Their financial results for 2023 were announced recently, and they are very impressive. They may be sucking eggs on the track, but minting money from doing so. They have become the first team to surpass £500 million in revenue. That is over $600 million, which is very, very impressive. Revenue for 2023 was £546.5 million, which is over £70 million increase from the 2022 revenue. So they have a lot of sponsorship coming in. And there are 1,289 Wolfies working in Brackley, preparing two cars for the season. And I think this does not include their power engine division, which is Mercedes High Performance, which is based in Brixworth. I don't think it includes that. But anyway, the numbers are very impressive. Toto and the team have 36 million followers on social media. Very, very impressive. According to Forbes magazine, estimated value of the team is $3.8 billion. And you know Toto owns 33% of that, so that's very impressive. Now, Mr. Rogers, these numbers are peanuts and escargot for you, but still very impressive for poor people of Paris. What say you?
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, the United States is a big market for Mercedes. They're everywhere, and they're new. I'm not sure what class it's called, but they're all electric. Mercedes is very impressive. One of my neighbors has one, and he thinks he's pretty cool.
And you know where Mercedes makes a lot of money in this country and also is? You know these trucks you see, which is the most popular brand in America, Freightliner? That's also owned by Mercedes. And I remember many years ago, Ford had a big trucking division, and that was sold to Mercedes. And that is sold in the U.S. now under the Sterling banner. So they are a pretty dominant player. They're very big in buses also all over the world. So good for them. And, sir, time for a new Timex. You probably heard that Michael Schumacher F1 watch collection is going on auction, and just the watches will bring over $4 million. I just wonder, you know, what the – obviously the family is not short on money, but, they, you know, his wife has been selling a lot of stuff, houses, plane, and now watches. So, you know, it's a difficult situation to comment on. Do you have anything to say on this news, sir?
Well, I'm afraid they are a little bit short of money, and that's why we have all these sales. No, it's awful, and there's no reason to comment on this. It's none of our business, and she's doing what she has to do. She's a very impressive woman.
Well said, sir. Okay, sir, today is April 24th, and this is a remembrance because on April 22, 1975, okay, this was the day Greg Moore was born in Canada. He was one of the most talented young drivers in IndyCar racing. He had signed to drive for Roger Penske for the 2000 season when he lost his life in a vicious accident at Fontana, Southern California, in the 1999 season finale at the age of 24. I was watching this race live, a very, very sad day in the world of motorsports. And, you know, it's amazing how things work out in life and death. I think it was on Saturday. He was at the track on a scooter, and he had a little, you know, coming together with one of the pickups or trucks there. He fell down and I think broke his thumb or something like that, and he had to go to the medical center. And the rule is that if you go to the medical center, you cannot take part in rest of the day's festivities. But he was so determined to start the race with his finger repaired and all that, that he started from the back of the grid, and then the accident happened within a few laps. Very, very sad. But I just wanted to mention that because I think he was a great racing talent and could have gone to great success with Roger Penske. Okay, sir. And now we will take a look at the, before we wrap up the show here, look at the championship points in Formula One. Top five, Max, 110. Checo, 85. Third is Leclerc, 76. Fourth, Sainz, 69. Fifth is Lando Norris, 58. There are seven drivers who have not scored any points. Both drivers from three teams, Williams, Kick Sauber, and Alpine. And, of course, Honey Badger from Visa Cash App, RP. And, sir, this news was just confirmed before we started recording. Ferrari has announced a major, major sponsorship deal with Palo Alto, California-based Hewlett-Packard, also known as HP. They are saying that this is on the same league as Oracle sponsorship. So more American money in Formula One. You know, it's a real sad part of these big, and I can understand why, all these big American corporations, can you imagine if they bring $70, $80 million and say, you need to put one American driver, just like, you know, Honda does when they supply engines. So that could solve the problem to putting Billy Boat or Mark Martin in Formula One. What say you?
Why not? You know, Mark Martin, I'm sure, is ready to just jump at the thought of it. But no, the biggest problem is we don't have any talent oozing up at the top of the bottle de crème. So I'm not too excited about that, but it is what it is. And we do have Miami coming up. You will be at Miami, Nasser. And I congratulate you on getting the credentials with your other employer. Good for you.
Any person needed anything in life, what could be better than getting two checks with nothing but zeros on it? I'm loving it.
Of course, but you'll be close to Fernando.
Yes, yes. And Fernando has become very fan-friendly lately. This is based on his own. But I think it'll be impossible to request. You would need at least 2-3 months. But I'm going to go and get the media credential, media information for every team, and start writing to them. And you know, slowly and steadily, we'll talk to as many people as we can. And right now, we want to talk about famous last words. Today, they come from a man who knows when to get out of the kitchen. The 2016 Formula One world champion, Mr. Nico Rosberg, he said, and I quote, this is after the Chinese Grand Prix, okay? Lewis Hamilton always gives an excuse every time he loses to George Russell. This year his excuse is, We are too far away in the car setup, and that's the problem. But last time I looked, Russell had the same setup, end quote. Do you concur with Nico?
I do, and it's interesting, but so Lewis Hamilton had a little blurb during the Chinese Grand Prix, and he couldn't believe, he said, I can't believe how slow this car is, which was my subliminal GP2 engine. I tried to find that on YouTube. I tried to grab that just for fun. Not very easy to find. There's a lot of people protecting Lewis, and they're all British. So if you could find that for me, send it to me, please.
Okay, sir. So we will do, and I wish you well, and we will talk next week.
Thank you, Nasser. I want to wish everybody for listening. I'm sorry we're 2 days late, but c'est la guerre. Good night.